CBSi in the World. I'm John Batchelor. Bob Zimmerman. He keeps the website Behind the Black. It is subscription or donation time, holiday, Behind the Black fundraiser. To continue Bob's conversations about space engineering, there are all these private enterprises following Bob's guidance of these last years that commercial space is the way forward to the moon, to orbit, to Mars. However, there is exploration along the way. What do we know and how do we know it? And we begin with Hubble, the NASA wonder robot that Bob profiled once upon a time in Universe in a Mirror. But Hubble now has gone non-transparent. Bob says that it's in safe mode. What does that mean, Bob?
Well, according to NASA's Twitter feed, and this is now almost a week ago, Hubble went into safe mode, and it, because of, let me quote, issues with internal communications. I'll read the whole tweet. Hubble science instruments went into safe mode on Monday, start of this week, after experiencing synchronization issues with internal spacecraft communications. Science observations have been temporarily suspended while the team investigates the issue. The instruments remain in good health. That's the only amount of information that NASA has released, and it's now, what, 3-4 days later? Nothing else has been released. I actually have to – I'm going to do some digging in the next day or so to see if I can find out more. But this hasn't been covered by many people, and I'm not sure what's going on. It could be that they have said nothing. Some of the news reports on this have used that lovely buzzword of bureaucrats calling this a glitch. Well, the goal of that word is to make the problem seem minor and no big deal, but they've said nothing. And when they say nothing, I think it's actually more serious than they're saying. And in fact, that they said nothing after 6 days is even more serious, makes me even more worried. So we don't know what's going on with Hubble. It could very well be that the problem was quickly solved and it was so simple that they didn't even bother telling us that it was fixed. I doubt that seriously. And so we have to keep our fingers crossed. Hubble could be in trouble here, John, very much so.
The name is John Morris, the engineering and mathematics teacher at Casa Grande Union High School in Arizona. This is local and makes good. Bob attended, and it looks like a rocket launch, Bob. Is this another private company ready to boost?
No. I was invited by John Morris, the mathematics and engineering teacher at Casa Grande Union High School, to come attend one of the after-school events. He runs a whole bunch of after-school programs, one helping girls learn computing, and another one getting the students to do robotic competitions, another one having to do with the exploration of space. He runs a 4-year program trying to teach students how to prepare to be successful in their first year at a university as an engineering major. So one of the after-school activities they were going to do was do a model rocketry. And he invited me to come, and I went. And so I got to see a lot of students learning how to do basic engineering. But really what Morris is teaching the students with this kind of activity, it's simple engineering, but it provides them the right grounding, not only learning how to work hard, but make sure they do the work right, and more, even more important, learning that failure, because rockets fail, failure is really only a step towards success. And so we went out and take a look. I've got a lot of pictures on Behind the Black of what we did, and it was really exhilarating to see these rockets launch, and some of them crashed. And the crashes were interesting because, once again, failure is a step towards success. So when they picked up the crashed model rocket and damaged, they immediately analyzed, and this is Morris's influence teaching them how to think, they immediately started to analyze what went wrong. And that's what you do in engineering. A failure is not a failure. A failure is teaching you how to make it right. And it was kind of fun, and it was really cool, and you get to see lots of rockets going off, and that's kind of fun, too. But this really tells you that there is good education in public schools these days, even if it is far between, John.
Dry ice on the moon, and there's a graphic showing where they're searching for dry ice in permanently shattered craters. What is the significance, Bob? Why is dry ice a benefit?
Well, this is a big deal. It really is a big deal, if true. We think there is a lot of ice in the permanently shattered craters, But for dry ice, carbon dioxide, solid carbon dioxide to exist, it has to be far, far colder and for continuously colder in some of those craters. And so some scientists using lunar reconnaissance orbit data over the last 11 years have pinpointed some small areas within craters where they think carbon dioxide dry ice could be there. And that's a big deal because water will give you oxygen and hydrogen and fuel, but dry ice gives you a lot of other things that can be used in conjunction with that in terms of chemistry. And so these become very valuable locations if true. Now, of course, it's uncertain, but the paper itself makes the point. If these regions are places where you can find dry ice as well as ice, they are of high value and are going to be prime settlement and mining targets by everyone. And as the paper notes, that this resource is highly concentrated geographically has implications for the governance of the lunar surface. Who's going to own it? Who's going to control it? And how are we going to determine that ownership? That's the question, John. It's a big deal.
Yeah, you're talking about geopolitics for the 22nd century. We go now to a story that is near at hand, but a fascination always, sunspots. Bob, there's a pattern that should be in place to rise to a maximum somewhere in 2025. Any interruption?
Nope. I do this update every month, and I do it in conjunction with NOAA's monthly update of its sunspot activity graph, and I just simply annotate their graph and then provide some commentary. And once again, in October, the sun was far more active than expected by the predictions. It has been consistently more active. In fact, it's entirely been more active since the sunspot minimum ended at the end of 19. It has always been more active, and in fact, it's ramping up to the maximum at a faster, steeper pace than expected. Now, that could mean one of two things. Either the maximum is going to arrive much sooner than expected, or more likely, it is going to be much higher and more active than the predictions. Now, the previous maximum was very weak, the previous two minimums were very long and extended, and the scientists had predicted the next maximum was going to be another weak one. It doesn't look that way right now. It actually looks like we're facing a very high active maximum, which has influences, we think, on the Earth's climate, but we really don't know how those link together. It also illustrates that the solar scientist community really at this point does not understand the solar sunspot cycle at all. They understand that it's linked to the magnetic field of the sun and its dynamo, but they do not really understand what the linkage is and why it produces these cycles of varying strengths and weaknesses, John. That's really
what is the Dyson sphere, Bob?
All right, the Dyson sphere was proposed by Freeman Dyson decades ago, the brilliant scientist, whereby if you want to make an absolutely perfect efficient way to gather all the energy of a star for your civilization, you build a sphere around the star so that you live on the inside of the sphere and all the energy of the star is obtained by your civilization. And so scientists have been trying to figure out, could we detect the Dyson sphere? Tabby's star was proposed as a potential Dyson sphere by several people. These are megastructures, they call them. Well, these scientists took a look at what we know about Dyson spheres to see how a Dyson sphere might influence the star itself. And knowing that, maybe we can detect them. And they say we could detect Dyson spheres now with the technology we have, which means we might find alien civilizations by using these techniques, John.
We think alien civilization and Dyson sphere, that would be a one-to-one correlation. However, we're going to go away from the idea of finding other sentient beings into understanding our solar system and other solar systems, a white dwarf and rocky exoplanets. What do they have in common?
Well, scientists looked at 23 white dwarfs, which they thought all had absorbed exoplanets sometime in the past, which polluted the makeup of those white dwarfs. So they looked at the makeup of those white dwarfs, and they've concluded, and it's an uncertain result, but they conclude that those makeup of those exoplanets has got to be very different than the makeup of Earth. They're going to have rocks and chemicals and minerals that you don't find in our solar system. Interesting, John.
Bob Zimmerman. He keeps the website Behind the Black. It's subscription and donation time for Behind the Black for a week, for holiday week. This is CBSi on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.